comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Welcome, one and all, episode number 18, Nerds United, JitteryMonkey.com. Greg Mahochko here, the very special, well, I can't say it's a very special Christmas special, it's not Christmas, but it's like Christmas at any of your local comic book stores. My local comic book store is not necessarily local, but it's the best one I found around, Twilight Comics, Shiloh, Illinois, and I'm joined... For the first time ever, 18 episodes in, and I think I talked with this gentleman about being a guest on the show 16 episodes ago. So we finally got there. But Brian is the owner, operator, and all-around good guy, Twilight Comics. Brian, welcome to Nerds United.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming to our free comic book day.
I know you asked me a month ago or so if I could record... You know, like set up table, you know, have the computer, have everything set up. I said, yeah, that sounds great. And then I had to let you know, kind of broke my own heart a little bit about a few days later. I said, no, I can't. I only get one Saturday off a month. And for the month of May 2014, it's designated for next week. Well, as you're listening, this would have been this previous Saturday, May 10th, in a benefit golf tournament. So doing what I can around my work schedule, but I certainly appreciate the opportunity to come in. Always enjoy coming to Twilight and laughing with you and Tim and Mike and everybody that works here. Just a great crew that you have here at Twilight.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. You've been coming here for quite a while now.
Seems like that. I got the Twilight bug, Twilight Comics bug. We all know there's some horrible... book and movie franchise out there by the same name, but it needs to be stated that you were first. You were Twilight before Twilight was cool.
Yep, this has been Twilight Comics for 21 years.
Not always in this location, because this is, if you're not familiar with the development of the Shiloh area, it's really boomed the last decade or so. But you used to be up in Belleville, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we used to be actually at a couple spots in Belleville, and earlier than that. Like, we're talking 96. Prior to 1996, we were in Collinsville. So,
bouncing all over the St. Louis Metro East area.
Yeah, we've been in this spot for about almost 8 years now. So I think we've got a pretty good spot now.
If you happen to have not made it out to Twilight Comics before, what you do if you're on Interstate 64, westbound or eastbound, doesn't matter to me, you want to get off at the Greenmount Shiloh exit. I don't know the number off the top of my head.
Tim likes to say it's exit Suite 16.
And that's why we're talking to Brian and not Tim. No, I'm kidding. Tim's in here, so he's listening as well. We will chat with Tim, but exit 16, you will go south on Greenmount Road till you get into the Target shopping complex, and you're closer to Deerberg's than you are to Target. But you're right there on the south side of the complex, a couple stores down from Michael's. It's a great shop, clean, nice location, easy to find. And we before we get going too far, we need to backtrack, because this is not the first time that you and I have had a recorded or a live conversation about comic books. And this goes back to my actual on the air when they let me be live on the radio days, and it was a pretty momentous occasion. It was Action Comics 900, and I called you up and didn't know you as well then as I do now, certainly. So you're like, why is this guy from Salem Radio want to talk to me about Superman? What? If you don't know, if you're not familiar with Action Comics 900, it was at the end, there was a small bit we talked about it at the time, but Superman, the big controversy in the media was that Superman was renouncing his American citizenship. Mm-hmm. He says, you know, I could maintain my, you know, U.S. citizenship, but I'm here to help the entire planet, and that's kind of what it boiled down to.
Yeah, I remember that, and I also remember a little bit before that, I think, with the Lex Towers Alex Towers were destroyed shortly after the Twin Towers in New York were destroyed. And that was a big deal. That was quite a bit before, I guess, 900. But a lot of controversial stuff happens in the Superman comics.
Which is funny because, I mean, if you think about Superman, he is, you know, he gets called the Boy Scout so often. And you would think that somebody who's, I guess, without controversy, I respect Superman for what he has done for, or respect the work for what it's done for comics on the whole. But he's kind of a, you know, when you have the godlike powers, it takes away from some of that natural drama. So maybe controversy is the way for a lot of those writers to go.
Yeah, I know there are a lot of people nowadays that just can't even really relate to the character Superman because he is godlike. He's that whole messianic thing. And I don't know, I've always liked Superman. I know that most people like Batman much, much more because he's kind of a normal guy, except, you know, he's got all the money in the world. So other than
how that works. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, if I had billions of dollars and a lot of free time, you know, I could probably get myself trained in a few martial arts and
get a personal trainer that teaches you how to be a ninja. And yeah,
there we go. Okay, bucket list item number three. No, because you know my parents are still alive. I couldn't be Batman.
Yeah. I pretty much to have any kind of a real career as a superhero. I think you have to have some sort of tragedy that requires one or both of your parents to die. Or like even in Spider-Man, you have both of your parents either die or disappear, or depends on what story you're going with. And then your uncle dies too.
I mean, if you look at a lot of the big ones, obviously there's Superman for his Kryptonian parents, and then as you go on into the story, Jonathan Kent passes away. Of course, everybody knows the Batman story. Even you know, of course, it's no secret I'm a Green Lantern fan, and Hal Jordan's father gets killed as well as a result of a test pilot gone wrong.
Yep. Yeah. Let's see. Let's think. We don't know what happened to Aquaman's parents, do we?
We don't care what happened to Aquaman's parents.
Poor Aquaman.
Not to his credit, though. Geoff Johns has done a lot better with him since the New 52.
That's definitely true. The first couple of story arcs were really good in the new Aquaman series. I can't say that I read it after that, though, unfortunately. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff to have to keep up with.
No, which brings an interesting point. I mean, you can't possibly read everything that sits on your shelves.
No, that would be, I don't know, I wouldn't be able to do anything else. Like on Tuesdays when we get our new shipment to process for Wednesday morning, Tim is going through all the stuff and making sure everybody gets what they're supposed to get for their subscriptions and that kind of stuff. And Mike is always back here sneaking off between customers to read the new stuff a day in advance so he can quote-unquote talk to everybody about what's going on.
And this is funny because I don't know how well you know Mike and I's history. We went to high school together, and I remember one or two times he's a year older than me, so he had the driver's license before me. And a couple of times we went to his house, and he just pulled out some comics, and I hadn't read comics in a long time at that point, so it was pretty cool. And to see that he's still, you know, active in the comic world, which brings us to how you got going in this. I mean, your origin story, as it were. Have you always been from this, you know, St. Louis Metro East area?
Yeah, I was born and grew up in Belleville on the West End. And as far as comics, I didn't start. I mean, when I was a little kid, my parents would buy me comics like at Toy Chest and the three packs and that kind of stuff. So I read some Superman and some Batman stuff back in the 70s. And yeah.
He gets all quiet like it's something to be embarrassed. Hey, man, you were born. It doesn't matter what year you were born. Sure. That's something to celebrate.
But some of that stuff I liked, and some of it creeped me out when I was that young and didn't really get into collecting comics intensely until I was like in eighth grade, which at the time for kids that are just about to go into high school, that's a little bit late to get into comics. But a friend of mine brought an Alpha Flight number 11 to school. Most people aren't even going to know what Alpha Flight is at this point.
I do know Alpha Flight. You're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong, but was that not the team that Wolverine kind of initially belonged to, and it was more of the like Canadian superstars or something?
What they did in 1980, was it when that came out, I think? John Byrne created the character Weapon Alpha, and that he became Guardian, and he was the leader of Alpha Flight. And he was sent by the Canadian government, because, you know, they're very subversive.
Got to watch out for those crazy Canucks.
He was sent to the X-Men to collect Wolverine, who was property of Department H of the Canadian government. And people really liked the character and that little bit of glimpse of a team that so much that Marvel said, "Hey, John Byrne, we want you to make them into their own team. We want to have their own title." And he's like, "But I made them like a really dysfunctional team to show that that they're not the X-Men. They're not a family that works together when bad things happen. They kind of fall apart when bad things happen." And they're like, "Well, I'll tell you what. We'll pay you $1 million to write and draw 12 issues." And he went, "Oh, I'll get right on that."
Amazing how something like that happens. The power of the almighty dollar. Yeah. That's impressive.
So anyway, I got number 11. I read number 11, and I'm like, "Oh, this is just great," because I had no idea I'd read Superman and Batman stuff when I was much younger. And, you know, it's Superman and Batman. Some weird detective stuff happens to Batman. Superman might fight some aliens. But there's nothing, like, really weird in the story. It's like, this guy is there, and his suit is going to explode, and his wife opens the door right when he's trying to defuse the thing that's going to make it explode, and he doesn't do it in time. And it's like, oh my God!
Boom.
Yeah! And, you know, I'm eighth grade. It's like, what is going on? This is a comic book? And so from then on, I was hooked. I had to go buy number 12 to find out what happened. And he died, but got better, and then died again, and over the course of a number of years.
Well, that's the funny thing, too. I mean, off topic, but on topic, is comic book heroes die, but they're never gone for long.
Well, usually. The one that's been, as far as like a full-on superhero that's been gone, that was dead the longest, was Barry Allen. Barry Allen died in Crisis back in the mid-80s, and he was dead for 12 years.
And Wally West, too, you know, when Flash came back, written by Van Jensen and Robert Venditti here just April, you know, so just last month, bringing back Wally West, and he was a character who, you know, when DC had their Blackest Night, Brightest Day, and a lot of, you know, heroes came back, Wally West was not one of those.
Nope, he was gone, and this is a different Wally West. I mean, he's still related to who he was related to, but he's a different ethnicity, which is just weird. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just weird. And I mean, well, he came back, and he's kind of dead now, too. Again.
Spoiler alert.
That's a whole storyline they're working on, because his first appearance in the New 52, he basically was dead. Which is just, okay.
So, how do you take the eighth grade, you know, love of comics, you know, at Alpha Flight 12, and go from there? You're going into high school. It's a time where, you know, a lot of young kids are putting away comics because they're just not cool anymore. Maybe that's, you know, different now than it was, you know, back in the day. Not to say that your back in the day was any less impactful. Never mind. Anyway, moving on as quickly as possible. Was there a time that from when you started, got the late start in eighth grade, did you stay on a pretty steady, or did you put them away for a little bit?
From eighth grade through high school, I went, and back then a new comic book day was on Thursday. I went to the comic book store in Belleville that was at the time Star Clipper, or not Star Clipper, they're in, wow, it's Silver Spoon, still S's.
I don't even know what Star Clipper is, but it sounds fun.
They're in St. Louis, oh, by the way, on the Loop. So it's a very nice store, but they have like a lot of pop culture stuff. And like a art gallery. It's kind of weird.
So you got a new comic book day on Thursday.
So new comic book day was on Thursdays back then, and every week I went and picked up new comics. You know, before I could drive, Mom had to take me. But
again, before any of us had to drive, somebody had to ferry us around from point A to point B.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of kids go to ball games or t-ball games, and Brian's like, take me to the comic book shop.
Exactly. And through high school, when I was in high school, whenever I would start dating a girl, I'd always take her to the comic book store. And if she wasn't cool with it, that was it.
You know, a lot of people are like, whenever I was in high school and I started dating a girl, I hid my comics like they were Playboys underneath my mattress.
Nope, not at all. Not at all. And that's why I married Shannon, because she likes comics as well. So it works out very well.
And I, you know, of course, my wife was just up here a little bit ago. She's a little antsy, so she didn't stick around. Not that she needed to stick around for me, you know, for the recording of this episode. But I'm finally excited. Well, I'm excited that I'm finally getting her, you know, into the comic set. And it started here with, of all things, Vampire Diaries 1.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. There's comics for everybody's taste. I mean, it's just like it's funny. You hear the standard like arguments between people that go to comic book stores: is, oh, would Superman win, or would the Hulk win, or would Captain America win, or would Batman win, that kind of thing. And I always jokingly say, well, it depends on who's writing and which character they like more. But it's funny when people say, oh, I don't like Marvel, or I don't like DC, or it's like going to the movies and saying, oh, you know, I thought about seeing that movie, but I don't like Paramount.
It's funny, just in the last episode, I visited with Free Comic Book Day founder Joe Field and asked him, you know, we got talking about how the first Free Comic Book Day was when Spider-Man hit theaters. And for Comic Book Day 2014, Amazing Spider-Man 2 is in theaters. In a couple years, it'll be 2016, the first weekend of May. The first weekend of May, we're supposed to see Captain America 3 and, you know, Superman versus Batman. And I asked Joe, I said, you know, do you see any of those studios bumping off that, or you know, or do they go head to head? And he says, you know, very similar to what you were saying, when you know, asked who would win in a fight between Superman and Thor, he says the answer's got to be DC and Marvel. You know, if they put them both out there the same weekend, both of them are going to do very well.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I mean, you know, the movie studios are weird, but no. But I think that, I mean, DC now, after a decade, is finally really trying to get back on the ball. And they're going to be sneaking characters from Justice League into the Superman-Batman movie. And they're supposedly fast-tracking the Justice League movie because they're filming them back-to-back. So I don't know. I just, the thing that lingers in my mind is, how are they going to keep Ben Affleck from smirking all the time as Ben Affleck, not playing Batman?
I'll tell you what, Ben Affleck has reason to not smirk. I don't know if you caught this news. I saw it on the Facebook feed this morning while I was at work and should have been selling cars, but wasn't. But he's banned from the Hard Rock Las Vegas for counting cards at the blackjack table.
Nice.
But you know what? If you think about it, that's something that Batman, you know, should be doing. Batman's not going to play a game of chance. He's going to go sit down at the table knowing exactly how to win.
That's very true, but he doesn't need the money, so. Ben Affleck might.
I don't know. Apparently, Gone Girl is supposed to be very good. I haven't read the book. So you had to get the stamp of approval for the ladies when you're in school. They had to be cool with comic books. 21 years for Twilight now. How did you get into the business side of it? What made you decide to want to open up a comic book store?
So after high school, I was going to SIU Edwardsville, and I was double majoring in graphic art and physics.
I've heard of some double majors that don't, you know, typically go together, but I can't see anywhere where graphic art and physics would team up. You know, that's the weirdest superpower combination of all time.
Well, you know, the counselor, when I was declaring my majors, he was like, "What?"
And okay, so it's not just me. Good, good. Continue.
And I said, "Well, have you ever seen a physics book that is really well illustrated and easy to understand?"
He's probably, "I've never seen a physics book."
Well, he said, "No." And I said, "Well, there you go."
So your plan after graduation was to go out and get with some physics book authors and be like, "I've got a physics degree, and I double majored in graphic arts. I've got this covered." What the hell were you thinking?
It's what I enjoyed doing. So I was, you know, 2 years into school, and I was working at the previous iteration of Little Caesars before they were the $5 hot and ready deal.
Wait. So when they had the big pizzas, like the 3 feet long pizzas?
It was buy one, get one free. So it was pizza, and pan.
Yeah, but they were the longer pieces, right?
They had, they did that for a little while. That was one of the promotions they did.
Yeah. That was delicious, by the way. A lot better than this $5 hot and ready nonsense.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, they have to be making it out of much cheaper stuff for it to be $5. But
shame on you, Little Caesars, for shame.
But it's easy. It's $5. It's easy to, you know, go and get.
I'll tell you what, this is a quick story, unrelated, but quickly. When I first moved to Cape Girardeau, Missouri, Little Caesars was my first meal. After getting moved in and stuff on a Saturday or Sunday, knowing that I had to be at work at 4 o'clock the next morning, it was Little Caesars. It was about a quarter mile from the house, $5 in, and I got some of the crazy bread, too.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
The crazy bread is trash if you don't make it yourself. If you make it yourself, oh, my God. It's the best breadsticks you've ever eaten. But if you get it from them, like if you go and pick up stuff, it's been sitting there and it's all soggy. If you make it yourself, which obviously you have to work there to do it, it's crispy on the outside and fluffy on the inside and just covered in butter and Parmesan cheese. Oh, man.
Brian, you're ruining my favorite part of Little Caesars here.
I'm sorry. It still tastes good. But it's not as good.
Okay, so you're working at Little Caesars. Back to the story.
So I'm working at Little Caesars, and me and a friend of mine had been friends since, like, kindergarten. And we were going to different comic conventions and getting stuff signed by artists. And we had the big book that was out at the time was Uncanny X-Men 275. It was one of Jim Lee's first Uncanny X-Men books. And we went to this convention in Chicago before Wizard World bought everything, and Jim Lee's there. Well, Jim Lee wasn't—he was a big deal, but he wasn't nearly as big of a deal as he became later on.
Wasn't quite rock star status.
Yeah, he wasn't Rob Liefeld. How embarrassing is that? Because Rob Liefeld back then had done a 501 Levi's jeans commercial. That's how big of a rock star he was.
And now. Oh, man.
Yeah, no, that guy.
And the thing about Liefeld is that he's such a polarizing person in the industry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's something.
All right, so you have an opportunity to meet Jim Lee.
So we meet Jim Lee.
Superstar on the rise.
Superstar on the rise, who is co-publisher of DC Comics now.
This is true.
And there's nobody there. I mean, we waited in line for maybe 10 or 12 people, but there's nobody there. And so we actually talked to Jim Lee for about 2 hours. Just talked about stuff, and he signed whatever we had. And we brought those back to the Belleville area, and another guy that we knew had just opened a comic book store called Fantasy Books 4. And that was on the east end of Belleville. And it hadn't even been open for more than like 6 months. We go in there and, "Hey, you want some signed books to put out for sale? And we could maybe trade them for, like, new books?" Because, you know, we're, you know, college kids and don't have any money.
You're enterprising young lads is what you are.
So he's like, "Sure." And he sold them right away. And we kind of started working off the books at the store and helping out. And then started working on the books at the store. And he's like, you're assistant manager at Little Caesars, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "So you've got some management experience." I'm like, "You kinda." And he goes, Well, Nick, and he was the owner of the Fantasy Books chain at the time, but I think at one point had four or five stores, and obviously at least four, because that was Fantasy Books 4. And he's like, he's thinking about closing the main store in Collinsville. Would you like to see if you can turn it around? And I'm like, yeah. So
AAA ball player getting the call up. Hey, we need a righty. You know, can you come up? Can you be here tomorrow? Okay.
Yep. So I went up there and I observed what was going on, and there was a lot wrong, and I corrected that. And this was in March, and by May, the store went from losing money to making money.
Which is by design what stores are supposed to do.
Exactly. So that was good, and that was through 1991, and then I worked there through 92, and there was discussion in the early part of 1992 about Nick retiring and selling off all of his stores. And the plans were I was going to buy the Collinsville store. A guy that they had that had run a store on Gravois named Steve was going to buy that store, and then Brent was supposed to buy Fantasy Books 4 because he was allegedly co-owner, but he didn't have any paperwork for that. Yeah. So weird stuff happened like weird stuff happens, and I end up buying Collinsville, and Steve ends up buying the store on Gravois, and Brent's out of the picture then. And so when I bought the store in January of 1993, I changed the name to Twilight Comics primarily for one reason.
And that reason comes right after this break. No, I'm kidding.
That reason is I answered the phone once, and there was a guy on the other end of the line. I said, I answered the phone. Hello, Fantasy Books. How may I help you? And he says, yes, do you have any books or movies for people who like to dress as babies? And I said, what?
You know, as you're getting in the story, I'm trying to jump into your brain and say, okay, he's probably gonna be some skeevy guy, be like Fantasy Books. All right, what else you got? I didn't expect that, Brian. That's a hell of a curveball.
I didn't expect it either, and I was like, no, I'm sorry. And he said, okay, thanks, bye.
He was trying to cut his losses and get the hell out of there.
Yeah. So that is the primary reason I went, I'm changing the name of the store when I buy it.
So why Twilight Comics?
Well, in high school, I made a comic strip with a character named Derek Wolfe, who was not a superhero of any kind, but he liked to fancy himself a superhero, and he was the luckiest, unluckiest person. Bad things would happen to him, but nothing that was ever fatal or lasting as bad.
So you said Derek Wolfe?
Derek Wolfe.
Derek Wolfe and the Twilight Comics. So I know I'm wrong, but I initially am like, where Wolf? But
no,
not quite.
So in one of the comic strips, he was hungry. He goes to the freezer, finds a frozen burrito that had been expired for a decade.
Oh, no.
And so it's got a foil wrapper, and he puts that in the microwave. Well,
you're not supposed to do that, kids. Hey, here I am. I'm Greg Mahochko, safety advocate for all. Don't put metal in the microwave and turn it on. Don't do it. It's going to end badly for you and a lot of people. Okay, back to the story.
So he puts the burrito in the microwave in the wrapper, in the metal wrapper, and of course, since I guess at the time he was a high school student, because that's what I was, his microwave wasn't clean, and so in there is a dust bunny, and so it explodes and brings the dust bunny to life, and that dust bunny is Twilight.
Okay.
And it talks to him and mocks him constantly.
Is it like a life-size dust bunny, or is it just small little...
It's like a ball of dust about the size of like a softball.
Okay. So where are the Twilight plush bunnies here in Twilight Comics? Because now I think they need to be a real thing.
Well, since there are, you know, the plush stuff is such a big thing now. I mean, you got the guy that's doing Tentacle Kitty and Pirate Kitty and all that stuff. I don't know. I probably ought to merchandise the thing.
I'm telling you, it would be a nightmare creator for children of all ages.
It would be akin to the plush Cthulhus.
What you could really do now, if the normal plush Twilights take off, is then you could get the ones that, you know, you press the ear and it talks and says sarcastic things to the owner.
That would be something. Probably wouldn't want to go as far as like the Furby stuff because that's way too creepy.
That's not good. I was thinking like, you know, things that a 2-year-old could operate.
Yeah. I can see that.
We're going in 50-50 on this, Brian, and we're coming out 50-50 on this.
You contact the plant in China, and we'll...
No. We're going to go American. We're going to do it right. No offense to the Chinese. I'm sure they're listening.
Oh, they always are. They're like the NSA. Oh, they probably are the NSA, but, you know.
They probably own the NSA.
Well, yeah, that's true.
All right, so you've been in business now 21 years, mm-hmm. and... I mean, of course, I was talking with Joe, you know, and he says that every decade it seems there's somebody saying, you know, comics are not gonna survive. They're on their way out. But then there are things like Free Comic Book Day, and this morning you had a line that wrapped, you know, I don't know how long because I got here late. I wasn't here at opening. Next year,
it was down past Michael's. They weren't wrapped around the corner, but it was down past Michael's.
So there's obviously a demand for people to come into comic shops, and you know, I'm sure that certainly there's a market for the comics online as well. But I like to hold. First of all, I like coming in here and hanging out with you and Tim and Mike and Rhiannon and everyone, and just having a good time. But I like holding that book in my hand as well, and turning the page and getting the splash page and just seeing all the good work that the effort of the artists and the writers and holding that in my hands.
Yeah, not having it print on paper just isn't the same. There's all kinds of discussion. I'm on a retailer forum, and really the consensus seems to be that once we start seeing the end of physical textbooks in schools, when kids have nothing to do with paper in school, that's when it'll die. I don't know that that's the case, though, because, I mean, you know, the printing press was created in...
I think it was...
I don't know. But the Gutenberg Bible was the first thing that was printed, you know, mass-produced, and that was a long, long, long time ago. And you know what? They still print Bibles.
And other stuff as well. Now, here at you know, Twilight, there are some stores that are just comic books, but you have tried to diversify to extend your customer base, your clientele, so to speak. One of the big things that is just huge at this particular store, I see all the time, you guys always are having tournaments and fun things for Magic the Gathering.
Yep, we do a lot with Magic the Gathering. Everybody does. Everybody that does anything with Magic the Gathering has Friday Night Magic, and we have two separate events. These are going to be terms that if you don't know Magic, you don't know what they are. But yeah, exactly,
that's me.
there's the standard, which is the most recent selection of sets of cards that have come out, and then there's modern, and modern extends back to, I don't know, about 10 years ago, probably a little longer than that, because, you know, I can never judge distance and time anymore.
How far is it between us and the door?
A little bit.
I gotta share this quick Magic story. I have never played Magic. The closest I got was a Facebook game based on the Big Bang Theory, and it was the Mystic Warlords of Ka'a. I don't even know how close that is. It's probably not anywhere near. But when I was in high school, I was a freshman, and there was a kid who, you know, had his, you know, stack of Magic, and he'd be sitting there, you know, not in recess or lunch or study hall or whatever, flipping through his cards, and you know, it wasn't. I don't understand it then. I sure as hell didn't understand it, you know, then. I don't understand it now, but it was his thing. So, you know, I didn't know anything about it. Didn't judge him. There was a kid who would be by today's standards considered a bully. And it was we were waiting on a substitute to come in for geography class. And it's sad that I know that because it's, like I said, 1996 or 97, whatever it was. Anyway, we're waiting for the sub to get there. And this bully, we'll call him Kid B, takes the other one's magic cards. He's Kid A. He's number one. And I saw the and I'm using, again, we're Nerds United, so we use the term nerd as a statement of niceness. Anyway, I saw nerd rage from this kid, and it was just, it was intense. I mean, he was like pushing desks out of the way, taking that stuff, that magic stuff, very seriously. And to his credit, I mean, he didn't get in trouble for, you know, throwing desks across the room. The other kid got in trouble for stealing magic cards. But they're very, I don't want to say defensive, but they're very protected, about passionate. There you go. And they're doing their best to protect the you know, it takes time, takes money. They're putting in the effort for Magic the Gathering, and you guys host a couple of events here, Friday nights and what, Sunday afternoons?
Friday nights are the Friday Night Magic. Thursday and Sunday we have open play. It's on our websites. And then once a quarter there's a new set that comes out. And there are pre-releases and launches for those. And then we have other various events, too. But, yeah, a lot of magic going on.
And aside from that, you've got tabletop games here?
We have a lot of different board games. We try to primarily carry stuff that you aren't going to see at Target and Walmart and that kind of stuff. Because
no Candyland. Sorry, folks.
Yeah, it's a little hard to compete when they're charging $10 for a board game that we have to pay $15 for to have. So we try to carry the weirder stuff. We're working on a deal right now with Cards Against Humanity so that we can carry it at actual retail level, because up until they do that, which is supposed to happen sometime this month, the only way you can find that in stores is if we buy it just like anybody else can off of Amazon. So we're paying the $25 plus the tax plus the shipping, and a lot of places you're seeing that thing like $50 when it's a $25 game. Well, hopefully within the next 3 weeks or so, you'll see it in stores for $25. And people love that game. And it is the most awful, vile game you have ever seen.
Cards Against Humanity? I know nothing about this game.
It's vulgar, and it's irreverent, and it is blasphemous, and it is slightly racist sometimes. And I have never seen anyone who has played it who didn't have a good time.
Fair enough. See what else. Obviously, you've got other merchandise here, T-shirts, hats, things like that. Hero Clicks. I don't understand that one either. Please explain in 10 seconds or less.
You know how you play army or a little, you have little figures and they fight each other?
Yeah, I did that.
It's an extension of that, except on their base it has little numbers that tell you what powers they have.
That seems a lot simpler than I was making it out to be.
It is. It's a little more complicated than it was originally, because there's, it used to be, it was Hero Clicks. All the rules are on the clicks, the C-L-I-X. And you click it to take damage. That was the idea. Well, now there are cards that go with them, because there's more rules.
They have to make everything more complicated. Complicated. Brian, it's been a great opportunity visiting with you. I look forward to being able to come in here and shoot the breeze with you again. There's a lot more, a lot of other folks to talk to. And again, thank you for everything that you've done here. You know, be it Free Comic Book Day or the Thursday, Friday, Sunday Magic. Just for letting me, you know, pop in every couple of months or so and give you my money. And I know you're really, really twisting my arm over that one.
Yeah.
But thank you for all that you've done for the comic book scene in the St. Louis Metro East area.
Thank you too for your podcast and being a great customer and talking to me and, you know, listening to my goofy stories.
And thank you for being a sponsor on the podcast.
We'll see what we can do. I mean, we're doing a little bit. We've done a little bit of stuff, so, you know.
That's true. And we're working out other details. But, Brian, again, appreciate your time and everything, and lots more years of Twilight Comics goodness.
Thank you very much.
Back here at Free Comic Book Day, Twilight Comics 2014, and I've got to tell you that a couple years ago, as I was making the ways around the table for Free Comic Book Day, 2011, 2012, I couldn't really tell you which one exactly, but came across, after hitting the comics, they had an artist who was there and had some of his prints were available, and I got, it was one of those, you know, buy one larger print, get a smaller print for free or half off or whatever the amazing deal was for this high quality art. So I said, I gotta have it. I got it kind of a cityscape, maybe like a bay type of, almost looks kind of Gotham-esque, especially Gotham Batman Begins-esque. And then I got the smaller print that I got, which, by the way, is the only one of the three prints that I have from this artist that's actually framed and hanging on the wall. It's called Say Anything, and it's got the three monkeys doing the hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil gestures, which is fantastic. So I got that. Would later come to recognize this artist as a big Whovian, yeah. Dr. Whovian, Dr. Who fan. Well, I'm not quite hip to the lingo, but David Carr is my guest now, and he's been out here Twilight Comics Free Comic Book Day for how many years?
Oh, yikes. Since the first one that I did for them was during the first Spider-Man movie, so...
That would have been the first Free Comic Book Day, 2002.
Yeah, 2002, I was out here for that, and that was when they were in their original location in Belleville, and they were also out at the Werenberg Movie Theater. They had set up in the lobby out there, so... We were set up for Spider-Man during the first couple of nights, and I was doing caricatures and Spider-Man drawings out in the theater. And then when Free Comic Book Day came, they popped me up in the window. They had like a little window display, and we threw a desk up in the window, and I was sitting there drawing all day. And it was a good time. It was a good time. And you can with every year, the crowds have doubled. It's just, you know, that first year, comparing the first year to this year or even last year, it just is ridiculous.
And you got to imagine that social media, obviously 2002 with the first Free Comic Book Day, if you didn't already have a comic book store or knew somebody who did, you didn't really know anything about it. Now, Facebook and Twitter and everything, I mean, it's really helped spread the word out and get the word out about Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and, you know, the thing that you know, kind of messes with my head when I think about it is, you know, somebody told me a few years back that, you know, YouTube didn't start until 2005. And so you think about how prevalent YouTube has become and how it's everywhere. And it wasn't around for the first 3 years of Free Comic Book Day. You know, the first couple of years Spider-Man came, you know, it's like the only way you could see those trailers for those new movies was to go to Apple Trailers and watch the trailers from Apple, you know. I mean, otherwise you just weren't doing those things. And so, yeah, between Facebook and Twitter and, you know, just all the other ridiculous little websites that have popped up, you know, that everybody uses, I can't even think of all half the new ones that are big right now. But, you know, it's more than keeping it alive. It's making it grow exponentially.
Let's jump off of the Free Comic Book Day train temporarily and maybe hop into a police call box, because you are, as I said, one of the three prints that I have of yours is, and I want to say that it's the TARDIS in the snow. I can't guarantee that, but I'm fairly certain that's the case. Let's talk about you know, your love of Doctor Who. When did that begin?
Well, actually, it happened. I grew up watching the old Doctor Who on PBS, and you know, so I knew it as a kid, but I had a vague awareness of it. And then a few years back, I was in the hospital, and I was unfortunately in the hospital for like 3 or 4 days. And the Sci-Fi Channel, back when Doctor Who was on the Sci-Fi Channel, they were running a marathon of it, and so I sat in the hospital watching, you know, Doctor Who for two or three days straight, and just became obsessed with it. You know, it was one of those, it hit me. It was like, there is every conceivable genre that you could be into in one show. If you like horror, action, comedy, sci-fi, westerns, you're going to have an episode like that that's going to touch on that fan base. And so, you know, that just started kind of brewing inside me as I was working on other artwork. And I've always told people that I have, I describe my artwork as I have artistic Tourette's. Some days I want to paint, you know, pretty landscapes and flowers, and other days I'm painting monsters and bathtubs. You know, it just kind of depends on my mood that day. And I guess it was about 2 years ago now, I had some landscapes that I thought were very pretty. Everyone walked around and said, oh, this is very pretty, but people weren't, you know, particularly interested in buying them. They were just, oh, that's pretty. And so I got frustrated with one of them because it looked like it was missing something, and I couldn't figure out what it was, and so I decided to paint a TARDIS in it. And while I was painting a TARDIS into it, and I was at a an art show at the time, somebody came up and bought it wet off the easel. And I thought, ooh, there may be something to this. So I went back, and I had, at the time, I had about a dozen landscapes just sitting at home that, you know, I'd been carrying around with me from one art show to another and sold some prints of, but never sold the originals. And I thought, well, you know what, I'm gonna put a TARDIS in those. And one of them was actually the Gotham-esque skyline that you were referring to earlier. That started off as just a Gotham-esque skyline with a water bay. And, you know, sold the prints of it. Everyone enjoyed the prints. People weren't really interested in picking up the original. I put a TARDIS floating out in the water of the bay. Sold the original like 3 days later, you know. And it was just like, hey, you know, this lets me make my landscapes and then put a sci-fi twist on them. And it was something that nobody else was really doing at the time. And to my knowledge, nobody still is really doing quite like I am.
ArtMonkeyWorld.com, also on Facebook, Facebook.com, I believe it's just /ArtMonkeyWorld, or you can search for it. I enjoy seeing it. There was one, I think you called it Upgrade, and a lot of people, you know, look at it. It's got the color scheme of Iron Man, but it's Upgrade, and I didn't grasp it until, you know, I was just talking with Brian earlier. My wife was here. We sat down and watched an episode or two on Netflix of Doctor Who, the first Christopher Eccleston. I don't know what number Doctor is. I don't know what number any of them are. But I asked her, I said, well, what'd you think about it? She's like, eh, it was okay. So I thought that would be the end of us watching Doctor Who. And I come back from work, you know, a week later, and she's on episode 8, you know, or something like that. She just started binge watching. I said, I'll watch the show with you, but you know, I was telling Brady, so she's the Doctor Who fan in the house, but it wasn't until I caught an episode that she had been watching, and it had that Upgrade you know, robot in it with I'm going to call it headphones, because I know that's not what they're called, but
it's a Cyberman, and it's a Cyberman that's painted the colors of Iron Man. And so, you know, and that was one that originally I'd started off with an Iron Man painting. And, you know, the more I looked at it, I was like, well, you know, everybody's doing Iron Man paintings. You know, I want to do something fun with this. And I thought, hey, well, wait, if I put the Iron Man has a, or not the Iron Man, the Cyberman has like a tubular design coming off the sides of his helmet. And so I thought, well, you know what, if I paint those on there and where Iron Man's central light is on his chest, turn that into the sea of the Cyberman on the newly designed Cyberman for the 2005 Doctor Who series. Then it's like, you know, what if Tony Stark had been upgraded into a Cyberman? You know, where would that go? And what's fun about that piece is you get the people that don't know Doctor Who at all. They'll look at it and they'll go, what the hell is wrong with Tony's head? You know, why is Tony wearing headphones? You know,
I was that person.
Well, yeah, but then you get people that, you know, they're like, they can only see the Cyberman, and they go, oh, it's a Cyberman painted, you know, Iron Man colors. And really, it was Iron Man that just had a Cyberman, you know, modification made to his helmet. But it's fun to watch those two groups stand in front of the painting and argue, because they will. And it was up in the store, I guess it was about a year ago, and after it had been hanging here for a month, I came in and Brian told me, the owner of Twilight, told me, he was like, this is easily one of the most debated about paintings you've ever brought in, because people will just stand in front of it for 15 minutes and get visibly angry with someone else.
You didn't realize it was ever going to be so controversial.
No, I really didn't. I just thought, you know, I was just in a silly mood when I did it. You know, art affects different people different ways, I guess.
as far as your fandom for Doctor Who, do you have a favorite Doctor?
Well, everybody has their Doctor. It's said that, you know, your Doctor is the Doctor that you first connected to, that you were first really exposed to. My Doctor is the David Tennant Doctor. But, you know, it's like, for me, every version of the Doctor is the Doctor because they are all the same man. But my personal favorite is the David Tennant one.
Touché, sir. Touché. And you were able to incorporate all of the Doctors in a painting that harkens back to one of the greats from the Renaissance period, and Leonardo da Vinci. Tell us a little bit about your I'm going to say Last Supper with the Doctors. I don't know if that's the name.
The title of it is actually The Infinite Supper. And that was one of those paintings where I got the idea from it, I got the idea for it. And I instantly hated myself for having the idea, because I knew that it was going to be a lot of work and it was going to take a lot of time. And I'm not a very patient person. I tend to try and do my paintings in a few hours at most. And the second I know that I'm going to have to do something large and it's going to take more than a day, I become frustrated with myself because I know I have to do it. It's a good idea. I just don't want to do it. But I did it. And it's the Last Supper with the inclusion of the War Doctor from the 50th anniversary special, and now the Peter Capaldi 13th Doctor. We now have 13 Doctors, so that means we now have I was given the opportunity to place a Doctor in the position of every single person in the original Last Supper painting. And the way that I tied them all together, and because there's a ton of details like on the tables and stuff, where I've got like the Key to Time and Riversong's diary, and you know, apples and Satsumas, and all the stuff that if you're really into the show, you're looking at this painting going, oh, look at this tiny detail and this tiny detail. And the way that I tied them all together to keep them in their traditional Last Supper poses, because in the Last Supper pose, you know, they're all wearing robes, so they have a very distinct shape to them, and to give them that shape while still having them in their traditional outfits, I wrapped Tom Baker's scarf all the way down the table so that it gives it that robed effect, but at the same time emphasizes the fact that they are all the same person because they're all wearing one scarf.
Hence, Infinite Supper. Very, I like how you tie, because, you know, and again, my knowledge of Doctor Who is very basic, so don't mock me too much, but I understand he's a Time Lord.
Yes.
So has the ability to go anywhere. So because of that, I hear and understand Infinite Supper, and it makes sense. It makes sense with the character, and it blends very well. It's a fantastic piece.
Well, thank you very much. You know, and it was again one of those pieces, you know, where I did it, and then instantly, you know, it got shared online. It got shared to the Doctor Who fan page on Facebook, the official one, and it got shared to Reddit, and it blew up real big there. And what was funny about it was it instantly became very controversial, because the painting came out right before the 50th anniversary, so there was a lot of people arguing over the placement of the Doctors. You know, this Doctor should have been in the position of Jesus, and this Doctor should have been in the position of Judas, and people just getting really angry with each other over it, and, you know, some of them were angry with me over it and frustrated, and I'm going, hey, you know what? This was my interpretation. Everybody else has got their interpretation. This was just my way of looking at it.
Pick up the brush yourself if you don't like it, right?
Well, I wouldn't go quite that far, but basically, you know, I just look at it as, you know, I ended up actually having to create a page on my Facebook page, on my website, that explained why I put every Doctor in the position I put them in, because I kept having people say, well, why did you put Tennant in this position, and why is the First Doctor over here? Why isn't he in the center? You know, and why isn't the War Doctor the Judas position? You know, and all this. And so I just wrote it all out, and, you know, every time anybody would ask me, I'd just send them a link to that page, because it just saved me an hour every time, because it was just getting asked that much.
And again, our website is www.artmonkeyworld.com, and you can go check out all the prints that would be available.
Yes, I've got all the prints available on there. And, you know, we've talked a lot about Doctor Who, but, you know, it's like I have a lot of different fantasy work. I have a lot of, you know, robots and monsters and stuff like that.
Cthulhu,
yeah. Cthulhu, it's funny. I've got a painting that I did a few years back called The Terror of Tub Time. And it's a little boy sitting in a bathtub, one of those old clawfoot bathtubs. And on the other end of the bathtub is Cthulhu rising up playing with a rubber ducky. And believe it or not, when I do art shows, that painting sells the most, you know, the prints of that one. I've sold the most copies of that to little old ladies who are buying it for their grandchildren. They want to put it in their bathrooms so when their grandchildren come over and they give them baths, they go, oh, well, the grandchild is the Terror of Tub Time. They have no knowledge of Cthulhu. No, they don't know the horror background. They don't know anything about H.P. Lovecraft, and I'm not going to bust that bubble. I just let it go, you know. And there's, I find it, you know, both endearing that they like the painting, and I'm thrilled they like it. But there's this tiny little bit of me that really enjoys the fact that I've got Cthulhu hanging in all these little old ladies' houses.
Is that
a guilty pleasure?
Is that Grandma's way of saying if you don't behave and take your bath like you're supposed to?
Maybe, the monster's going to pop out. But, you know, the thing is, when you look at the image, they're both, you know, it's a playoff of, you know, a Norman Rockwell Saturday Evening Post cover. And, you know, when you look at the image, the little boy isn't particularly scared. He's just sort of confused. Like, where did you come from? And, you know, and Cthulhu has the same look on his face. Why are you in my bathtub? So you don't really know who is in whose bathtub. And it's just it's one of those pieces I did in an afternoon for the heck of it and became very popular. And I've since, you know, putting Cthulhu in different places where he shouldn't be has become a thing now. So instead of, you know, I've got Cthulhu dressed as Thor and it's Cthorlu. You know, I've got Cthulhu dressed as the 11th Doctor. And then, you know, the title of that one is, you know, I'm Cthulhu now. Cthulhu is cool. You know, because that was Matt Smith's, you know, popular saying, you know, he would, you know, insert object or thing here is cool, you know, is cool now, and isn't that cool? And
did you do, I want to say there's a blending or something where you inserted Cthulhu with a cat?
Cthulhu, yes.
I knew it.
Cthulhu, yes. There was a cat that showed up in my parents' backyard, and they named it Shadow because it sort of just emerged out of the shadows one day and adopted them, wouldn't leave them alone, and so it kind of became their adopted house, well, not house cat, but porch cat. It lived on their porch. And I used to joke that the thing had this reach, you know, where it would be sitting across the porch and instantly would be right next to you grabbing something, and you never noticed it move the 8 feet that it did, which is typical with most cats, really. But so I was playing around with the idea of what if you cross Cthulhu with a cat? Well, you'd have this little kitten with tiny wings and tentacles coming off of its face to play with the little cat tree. And yeah, it's just people ask me where the ideas come from, and I honestly can't tell them. It's sort of a weird, dark place. You know, they just sort of bubble up from out of nowhere, and if they make me giggle, I paint them.
That was actually going to be my next question, or a bit of my next question, as far as where do you draw your inspiration, but it seems like it's completely random.
It is completely random. I grew up being exposed to things that, you know, most parents today would not expose their children to. So, you know, I was, you know, 5 years old watching not like that. I was 5 years old watching George Carlin and the Three Stooges and, you know, Ghostbusters, you know, which isn't a bad movie, but as you watch it as an adult, you catch all the jokes that were going way over your head at five. Because the Ghostbuster movie is very much more adult than the Ghostbuster cartoon or even the sequel, Ghostbusters 2. And, you know, so I grew up watching all of these things and, you know, sort of absorbing, you know, the sort of Saturday Night Live Looney Tunes mentality with, you know, old-time horror movies, you know, the Universal Monsters and Freddy Krueger in the late 80s, you know, and, you know, There was a time when I was very little, I wanted to be a special effects artist. So I was collecting, you know, all the Tales from the Crypt comic books and, you know, Weird Tales and all those things to just sort of study that. And then I opted not to do that and decided, you know, I think I just want to make individual pictures. And so I've just sort of taken all of that life experience and just sort of pooled it together, and this is what you get from that.
And I know I've talked with you, you might not remember, but I talked with you, it's probably been a year and a half or something like that, maybe not quite a year and a half, about the possibility of me commissioning you to do a painting. And I'm going to put the idea out there of what it was and see if it jogs your memory. It's no secret. Obviously, I'm a huge Green Lantern fan, and so I was thinking Green Lantern versus Darth Vader.
I remember that. Okay, I remember that now. Yeah, because I remember saying that my first thought was it would look like the Schwartz ring from
Spaceballs.
Spaceballs. Thank you. I couldn't remember. It would look like I can remember Schwartz. I couldn't remember Spaceballs. That's sad. It's been a very long day up here at Free Comic Book Day. But it would look like the Schwartz ring versus Darth Vader. You know, because it would just be ridiculous. But that's the kind of thing that's like, you know, you've got your typical fan art, which I'm a huge fan of. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy it. I do it. I make them. But for me, you know, lots of people can do a painting of Darth Vader or Batman or Superman. It's putting them in a situation that their original creators and the companies that own them would never put them in now. You know, you wouldn't see, you know, Disney's not going to go, hey, let's cross Green Lantern with Darth Vader. They'd never okay that. And Marvel would never okay that. And DC would never okay that, because I think Marvel still owns the Star Wars. I think they reverted to them after Dark Horse lost them for the comics rights. I can't remember anymore. But either way, none of the companies that own these characters would ever go, let's cross these two and see what happens. You know, I actually just had somebody today suggest, you know, the scene from, they actually just commissioned me for it, the scene of Kermit the Frog in the swamp, where Dom DeLuise comes, you know, rowing up to him in the Muppet movie, only you replace Dom DeLuise in the rowboat with the TARDIS and the doctor leaning out asking for directions. That's the kind of, you know, it's like when you get people coming up suggesting that kind of stuff to you, you know, you go, I've kind of struck a chord somewhere with people, and I just enjoy that.
I've enjoyed our conversation. I certainly hope it's not our only conversation. If someone wanted to get in touch with you as far as, you know, commissioning a Green Lantern versus Darth Vader, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is through my website, artmonkeyworld.com. There's a little contact page. Just shoot me an email. Explain to me what you're looking for, and I am always happy to send you a quote and figure out what we can do to make that happen.
For the record, now it's getting recorded, so it's for the record. I'm still interested in the Darth Vader Green Lantern piece. It's just at the time, I was talking to my wife about it, and I said, "Well, you know, it's going to be about this much or so." She said, "Okay," I hesitate to say her full response was like, "But it boiled down to, at the time we couldn't afford it." It's still in the back of my mind, obviously, and I'm still excited to someday see. I don't know. We might have to do something to make it not look like it's a Schwartz ring. You know, maybe it's a ring generated construct of a sword or something like that.
Or something like that. Yeah.
We can figure something out. But I see it in one of those, you know, iconic images of Luke versus Darth with the background from Empire. So I see it in my head. You're the artist, so I would defer to you. But it's going to happen.
That sounds great. I look forward to it.
David, I've appreciated it. Like I said, best of luck, and it looks like you found at least a niche of, you know, where's the TARDIS going to end up next? And looking forward to seeing the answer to that question as I continue to watch your work unfold and see it all on Facebook. Thanks again for your time, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. This was great.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.